Hello everyone and welcome to This Nintendo Life. My name is NBZ and you join us here for episode 69 of this here podcast. If I sound a little different, it's because I'm not using the hotness of my new microphone. I am away from home, I'm down in London. It's time for a bit of summer vacay, as they say, over in the US of A. I'm just rhyming like a troop here. And and we're here and we're ready to bring you a show. I'm joined as always by my co-host, it's Bally. And Bally, somehow, is also in London at the exact same time.
I'm on the other side of London at exactly the same time as you. I think this just demonstrates how big and vast London is. We're not in the same place. And of course, we are now outside of the EU, which is even more sad times.
I think your sigh says it all, Bally.
It really does.
Yeah. So, hey, we're living in a new country. It's a new world. You know, Bally, I think this is interesting because we're actually living through some history that I feel in 50 years' time kids will be sitting in classrooms discussing this as a potential turning point in the history of the United Kingdom.
And
who knows?
I feel like our generation actually is going to live through a lot of history and has already lived through a lot of history.
Yeah, we have indeed. History is a crazy thing, Bally. It's a thing that keeps
happening. It just keeps on going.
Yeah, that's what we're doing here. We're hoping to make some history ourselves with this podcast. Talk about Nintendo, all the fine things. Bally, how about you tell everyone what the lay of the land for today's show is?
We are going to talk about what we've been playing, then we have a few emails, and then for our final segment, we will have a guest, and we are going to wrap up our chat on E3 from 2016.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll mop up some of Nintendo stuff that we didn't talk about, and maybe talk about some of the other conferences and some of the other games from E3 that were not from Nintendo that still interested us. That'll be good. It'll be a good fun time. And man, it's in the rearview mirror now, Bally, E3. This happens every time, and you think, God, it's so long until the next one, and it kind of hits you before you know it.
But we have so much going to happen before the next E3.
Oh boy, do we. Here's the funny thing. Like, we thought that this year was going to be a crazy train. It's ramping up. We just haven't hit what the real peak is going to be yet. But I'm sure we'll get there. NX round the corner. I'm very excited. We're going to have to wait a bit longer for that to occur. So while we wait, Bally, let's talk about some old games. Let's talk about games we've been playing, things that have been passing our time in the last few weeks. How about you go first, as per the usual?
So normally when I'm in London and I see my friends who live in London and they own a PS4, last time I played Firewatch.
You did, yes.
This time my friend Shaq, he suggested we try out a game called Enter the Gungeon.
Yes.
So we did a bit of co-op for that game. And it's a game that really suits co-op, actually, because you're basically playing as a dude, and the enemies in this game are actually guns. And it's very strange, because it's sort of pixel arty, but at the same time, it feels like a Link to the Past, almost, art style-wise, and the way that the dungeons you walk around are laid out. But ultimately it's a shooter. Like, you have a gun and it's a dual stick shooter in a funny sense, from a top down perspective, if that makes
this
sense.
This is kind of a roguelike as well,
and it's a roguelike exactly, because it's like you get as far as you can. It's all randomly generated also, and then when you die you start right from the beginning, and it's all about sort of ramping up your money, buying upgrades, and then, like I said, when you die, you lose all of that. So that's
the interesting thing. When it comes to roguelikes, I'm always focused on, like, what are the persistent elements here? What are the things that remain even after you go through and you have to start again? So obviously Rogue Legacy had the gold system, where you collected as much as you could in a run, go back and start upgrading your castle and unlocking new things to, you know, make yourself better and make yourself last longer to go further in the castle and, you know, get to the bosses and beat them and everything. What is the loop here? Is it like that deep, or is it just get money, buy guns, get money, buy guns?
It's defeat enemies, get money, buy guns, buy health upgrades, face bosses, get to next level. And like a level is essentially a mini dungeon, and it looks like Zelda, but it plays nothing like, because you're not really solving puzzles at all. You're just clearing enemy rooms.
Just straight up action.
Straight up action. But the shops do feel quite sort of Zelda Shovel Knight, where you walk in, you've got your money, and you can pick up upgrades, that sort of thing. Health boosts and things. This game is incredibly, incredibly difficult. Like, it's quite cool because you've got this mechanic where you can roll. It almost feels like the roll, or do you know that move you can do in Guacamelee where...
Yes, where you go through an enemy.
Where you can go through an enemy. It's a crucial part of this game to, like, dodging bullets and staying alive. Because when you do take damage, because it's like a roguelike and you have to work... There's no heart pieces when you defeat enemies. There's no sort of... just regenning health or anything. You literally have to buy using a lot of money to get your health back, and it just makes the game so tough. And some of the enemies are just absolutely brutal, and you really do have, like, it is really good fun in co-op, because you can sort of take different parts of the screen and try and take down an enemy together. And I mean, I must have played for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, mm-hmm. maybe to an hour, and we didn't get past, like, the second dungeon once, and it's just really brutal. It's just so brutal. But at the same time, and I've not really played any roguelikes before, at the same time, it's still super, super good fun, like, and it's quite original.
Yeah, I think those games have to be engaging from a gameplay standpoint, because it is a constant loop of doing the same thing kind of again and again. And it's the sort of thing where I feel like you can put it down without necessarily worrying about getting to a perceived end game, if you like, which I think is kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
In the sense that we focus very much on, like, single player, campaign based, like, go through and defeat this stuff. And it seems like roguelikes have much more pushback against that, and if you do manage to kind of get to the quote-unquote end of them, you're putting a lot of time and a lot of effort into it.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, it was just a really good game to pick up and play. And yeah, it was a cool experience. I'm open to trying out more things like it, because...
And we may have Bally talking about some other PS4 things in the future through some circumstance, but maybe we'll talk about that on the next show.
At a later date. Absolutely. I've also been playing, and I finished the first game that I've completed from the Nindies Humble Bundle.
Yes.
Nindies or just Nintendo?
I can't remember. I think Nindies, like, is the word that they use to describe their whole initiative there. Actually, I think it was the Friends of Nintendo bundle, because you did have Street Fighter V in there. That's totally not an indies. Like, Capcom major release. Darksiders 2 from THQ. But yes, it was the same sentiment as the last one. But we had the European version that we could get as well.
So yeah, I beat Nano Assault EX, which is a interesting shooter style game. It's got a real style that feels very Metroid-y to me. It's all, so you're playing as this micro-sized ship that's basically fighting bacteria.
Yeah, you're like shrinking down into like molecules and stuff, and attacking all these like interiors of a body almost.
And it's as a result, it does mean that most of the game looks quite samey, I thought.
I think it's got a cool aesthetic, but it definitely doesn't change it up that
much. It doesn't change up too much, but I think it does work for this game. And it feels like very, you know, alienoid almost, because, I mean, it's just weird. It really does have like a Metroid Prime feel to it.
It's very interesting when you think about that whole alien aesthetic. This is essentially boiling down to the microbes of like our own biology, and yet within that thing that is so close to home, it feels so distinct and different and alien.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like that. The whole setting is quite a neat idea that I can't really remember having been done before. It's a mixture of three broad styles of games. So one style is it's a bit like Star Fox. It's like on rails shooter. Like you're going forward and it's on rails and you're just shooting everything that comes on screen. You're trying to survive. And I should point out now that like you die instantly when you get hit by anything. You have to, even though some of the levels are quite easy, it's very easy to just take one hit and die. So you've got maybe three or four lives and you can get more lives, but it's so easy to just not focus for a split second and just fail, basically.
I think the really weird thing about this game is it has an inverse difficulty curve, where at the start, it's very challenging, not only because you're not used to the controls and you're kind of, you know, adjusting to how this game plays, but you have very few lives. And so over the course of the game, you collect these blue orbs, and when you get 100 of them, it basically increases your maximum life capacity. So every time that happens...
Oh, does it? I'd never really noticed that it increases it permanently.
So that's how that happened, basically. Like, later on, you can go up to 9 lives maximum, basically. Hmm. Which essentially makes the end game a piss take. So the starting levels are really challenging and tough, and some of those bosses, like, really, you have to have quite a few tries at them.
Yeah.
And you get to the end, and it's like, well, this is kind of a cakewalk. Which,
yeah.
I like that, because I never appreciate these kind of bullet hell shooter style games if you get to the end and it becomes an impossibility, like a task that you just can't climb over. But on the other hand, it's like, well, it's somewhat of an anti-climax because I have 9 lives, so I don't really need to worry that much if I get hit. It kind of takes away a bit of the tension.
So, like I was saying, it's a mixture of these strange levels. So you have the Star Fox style on rail levels. You've got the bosses, like you mentioned, MBZ, where they reminded me of like the 3D bosses from Kirby 64, the Crystal Shards.
Yeah, and Sonic Rush does it as well.
So you're kind of moving in a 3D space, but on a 2D plane.
Yeah.
And circling around the boss. And there are bosses in the on rail style as well. And then the third style, which makes up most of the levels in the game, really reminds me of Mario Galaxy. So you're kind of moving around these planetoid things, and you basically have to collect 3 parts of DNA and just clear out all the enemies on each planet. It sounds very simple, but it's actually can get very challenging. I personally don't really enjoy the on rail levels too much. I think that they're a bit repetitive. I've seen it and done it before. Some of them are really challenging, actually, but it's not much fun. I think the Mario Galaxy style planetoid bacteria things, they're pretty cool. I do enjoy those, and they do mix it up with like doors and collectibles and I don't know, random crap. I do
think that they do a bit too much of that stuff. They do very much lean on it. It's the level style that you'll come back to the most.
Yeah.
And it's reminiscent of, you haven't played any of these style games, but there are lots of twin stick shooters that existed in the 360 generation. And it's reminiscent of those. The only difference is on 3DS you don't have a second stick unless you're using new 3DS, which I don't know.
I'll come to that in a second. I was literally just going to say that my favorite style was the bosses.
Sure, yeah.
By a long way. So the C-stick, the nub. So the game asks me, like, when I turned it on, like, have you got a Circle Pad Pro attached? And I said, like, well, yeah, because I've got the nub. So I did it.
Yeah.
It feels horrible. I think I've just decided the nub is good for cameras and
right.
that kind of thing, but it's horrible for action.
I think it's because it's so subtle.
Subtle, but it's so small, and my thumb would just slip over it, and it's so stiff that
it's not a good position at all.
So I immediately swapped to the 4 buttons. So basically, it's 4 buttons acting like an analog stick. Your shooting in the direction that you're pressing.
I definitely think that as far as a workaround goes for twin stick shooters, it's a pretty decent one. I think it works functionally well and does the job. But I can 100% see why someone would want to play this with a circle pad.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that feels like the correct way to be playing.
It does feel like the correct way, and like you can change the spray of your bullets. I always had it focused. I never sprayed them once.
Yeah, same. I always did that. It seemed like the best route of action.
Exactly. So I think it's a cool game. I mean, the weapon upgrades were a bit random, so you got like special weapons that you can collect.
I found... always stuck with that main one because it was this lock-on target thing that made clearing out screens
absolutely.
Really easy.
Like, I was really shocked they give you that at the start because it's easily the best, and I completely agree.
It seems very overpowered. Especially in the Star Fox-esque, like, first-person, not first-person.
Oh, it's
but,
so
know,
helpful for the on-rails
missions.
Yeah,
just clearing
missions,
out those big rooms full of enemies that seem like this onslaught is super helpful. And it kind of gets to a cheating point at the end, because if you die and lose a life, that whole bar of special meter fills up automatically.
Yeah.
So you can just, like, spam all of your special, die, spam all your special again, and it just makes...
Yeah.
It does trivialize a lot of the bosses later on.
True.
Them very easy. But I did think, I agree with you, I think the bosses are definitely the strongest part of this game. They're very
and some of
coolly
the toughest.
Designed. They're pretty tough, and they definitely make you think a little bit and give you maybe almost a Metroid-style puzzle-esque feel of...
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Not necessarily the Zelda level of, you know, finding a weak point, but it's definitely, okay, how do I approach this? Where do I want to shoot for? And I need to be nimble, kind of.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I completely agree. I think the bosses are cool, and they are a bit more unusual, even though they're ultimately all quite homogenous different forms of bacteria and things, but ultimately this game is very short. I spent like 2.5-3 hours playing it. It doesn't overstay its welcome, which is good. It's nothing special, but it's a solid shooter.
I really enjoyed those levels, the Star Fox levels that you were
really
not a fan of.
Yeah.
I found them much more engaging than anything from Star Fox, and I thought the 3D was really good.
The 3D is very good. I definitely agree with that.
There are times when it becomes kind of a travesty. The frame rate on this game is a fucking wonky piece of shit.
It just slowed down heavily.
So much slowdown on areas, and then like there's this weird shimmer that happens on some levels that makes the 3D really difficult to look at and kind of just janks your perspective. I don't know if you had the same problem on new 3DS. Might be an old 3DS problem. Or maybe just the new 3DS's power is able to handle a lot of this game better. But it certainly was messing with my screen. Like, there was kind of screen tearing going on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'd necessarily screen tearing or anything like that. But there was definitely a bit of slowdown. But I definitely agree. I think the 3D in general worked really and looked really good on this game.
I think it helps a lot for gameplay. Like, just seeing where bullets are coming from. Especially, like, there are some bosses where you're circling around them and they're shooting stuff in your direction. The 3D stuff for that is really invaluable. It's so helpful.
Definitely. And, like, a game like Star Fox 64 on the 3DS definitely benefits from that as well.
Totally,
noticeable. So, yeah. Cool
I
game.
Like that, because, you know, there haven't been many of those in a long time where the 3D has started to kind of impact gameplay. It's always nice to go back and find, like, oh, yeah, I remember when 3DS games did that. Good stuff.
MBZ, I hear there's been an awakening.
There has been an awakening, you're correct. So I've been playing two games that Bally played a long time ago. I think they were both on your 2014...
2014 top 10.
Yeah, game of the year stuff. So I've been playing Pikmin 3 and Link's Awakening. Bally, do you have a choice of which one we should talk about first? Because you've played both of these, so we can kind of have a nice chat about them.
No, I know you've not finished Pikmin 3, so why don't we get your first thoughts on that?
Sure. So Pikmin 3, a game that Bally's been telling me to play for donkey's years.
Since 2014.
And it's not often that I play stuff that Bally tells me to. It's usually the other way around. But we had a little bit of a taste of it earlier in this year when I played Advance Wars, which I enjoyed. I thought it was a good time. Certainly not as big of a fan as you are. But I think Pikmin 3 is really fucking great. I think this is a great game that I'm glad I joined it at this entry for a couple of reasons we'll get into. But Bally, you've definitely not been overselling this. And I thought maybe I've had some arguments with you in the past of like, in our top 50, should Pikmin 3 really be this high? Is it really that good? And having played like, I'm maybe like 8-9 hours in now. Yeah, I really agree with you. I think the game is fantastic, and it is very refreshing to me as someone who's not approached this style of game before. I've never really played RTSs. I played some Pikmin 2 with you, but I think the GameCube control scheme and stuff like that, it didn't feel that fluid. And Pikmin 3 is just such a sublime experience. Now, I agree with people saying it's clunky, because certainly from the standpoint of playing with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck while having the gamepad as a map can be construed as a bit of an awkward thing, because, like, how many things can I hold, you know, at the same time? It's kind of it's kind of silly when you think about it. It's like the epitome of Wii U. It's like, how many controllers can this thing? Let's just throw everything at the wall.
But
the way I've been playing it is I've been using the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, and my small TV that I've been playing it on has it's on a little desk, and I'm very close to it. And so I basically prop up the gamepad on a couple of Wii U boxes, so it's kind of an angle facing me. So at all times I can see the map on the bottom screen, and I have my Wii Remote and Nunchuck. And I haven't tried the gamepad controls, but I don't think I would ever want to, because I will say this here right now, Bally, I think Pikmin 3 might have the best motion controls of any game I've ever played.
Really?
And it's not because it's anything revolutionary. It's because it is so subtle and perfect that it almost feels like a mouse in a first-person shooter.
Absolutely.
Where it is just the extension of your arm, and it just works magically.
I mean,
because it's... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would definitely recommend trying the gamepad for all of 2 seconds just to see how terrible it is in comparison to the Wiimote, because I completely agree. The Wiimote, you can literally point on an individual Pikmin like a mouse and just quick point, quick get them back in your squad, and you're ready, away to go.
Yeah, and it's not even that you're making that large of movements. Like, it's as I said, it's subtle, so you're kind of like moving it across the screen to point areas where you want your Pikmin to attack. You can throw them with such accuracy at enemies. It's a simple enough control scheme that the lack of buttons on the Wii Remote and Nunchuck doesn't really harm it. It uses the Nunchuck motion control well to, like, split up your party, and then you can choose, okay, I want this person here, and I want to grab this many Pikmin and take them on down this route. And it just, it seems like, especially when you're calling them back to you, I feel like on the GameCube controller, that would be a bigger issue, because you're wanting to reach into the distance, and it allows you, because your walking speed isn't that fast, to grab Pikmin from a faraway place and get them to just rush towards you instead of you doing the job, and makes that very simple.
And it's the, like, Pikmin 3 does, it basically takes all the ideas from 1 and 2 and just cleans them up. And,
totally.
But this is an area where it really goes to the next level, where there's far more emphasis on enemies and bosses and throwing your Pikmin on specific parts of those bosses.
Right.
And it's just so well implemented and ultimately a more fun game because of the way it's designed, that you can actually point the Wiimote at different targets on enemies. And
yeah, it really doesn't make me want to go back and play the other two games. I know that there's
I know what you mean.
Play control versions now. I don't know if those are as good in terms of the controls as Pikmin 3 is. I've heard maybe some conflicting things about them, but if I were to go back and play the other two, I would 100% try those new control schemes before the original. Because it feels like, yeah, I can't go back after this. You know,
yeah, I mean, I do want to play Pikmin 2 because I own it and it's in my backlog, but
totally.
I'm totally prepared to just accept that it's going to be a real time machine step in the wrong direction compared to Pikmin 3.
So when we talk about the design of Pikmin, I think it's something that I didn't really expect, is that Pikmin is basically a Metroid game.
You
go through areas, and these areas are nice and explorable because they don't feel overwhelmingly big. It feels like I guess, this weird mix of Mario 64 and Metroid, where you're jumping into these paintings almost, these parts of land that have a limited kind of area that you can move around in. But you're always constrained by what you can go and do next. And so that's constrained by the time, which you have to always keep an eye on and pay attention to, but also by the abilities of the Pikmin you have. So they'll start off in an area and there'll be this big yellow electric gate. And so clearly, I need electric Pikmin to get through that. So before I can do that, I need to go and you know, muster through the areas, defeat some enemies on the way, use my red Pikmin, find a bridge, get the bridge working, go over that, find a new type of Pikmin, rock Pikmin, use that to break open this crystal. Like, you see the progression starting to occur, and it's this very satisfying loop.
Yes.
Where you're slowly but surely uncovering this map, and as you go along, you have multiple objectives. So the primary objective is to search out and find your friends and find Olimar and see what the larger picture is, right? So that's the Metroid-style progression of, you know, getting past these areas that you couldn't before. And then you have the secondary progression of, I need fruit, because if I don't have fruit, then my players won't survive, and therefore I'll have to restart the days over and over again. And so there's always like multiple objectives in your mind, and you're always thinking, okay, so I need this day, I need to focus on getting a piece of fruit, because if I don't do that, then I won't have more time tomorrow to do that. And you start kind of subdividing. You think, okay, so today's objective is to get fruit, but I could also pick up a bunch of yellow and rock Pikmin on the way, so I'm going to focus on maybe having one of my characters go off and do the fruit collecting, and have the other one focus on collecting the bottle caps to bring back to the ship, and you know, build up my army, as it were,
pellets.
So I have kind of a surplus, yeah. And it really becomes this micromanaging, multi-managing thing, especially when you start to get three different characters that you can use. The gamepad is invaluable. You can basically automatically send someone on a journey and say, like, okay, go to this point. And it may take them, like, 2 minutes. And while that's happening, you can still be actively doing stuff, which is really important because there is a time limit constantly happening, ticking in the background. So that is something I've really enjoyed. It's something I didn't expect to, because generally I don't like time limits in games, but the thing with Pikmin 3 is it doesn't seem to have like a set number of days that you have to finish everything in.
No.
It seems like you're only limited by the number of fruit you have, and at this point I have like a huge surplus of fruit, so I don't even need to really worry about that at all. I think maybe that's one of the things where it tricks you, is that secondary progression of getting fruit isn't necessarily a thing you have to worry about, because I feel in the natural way that you play the game, you'll have more than enough anyway.
I mean, ultimately, I collected every single bit of fruit in the story mode, and
I mean, it's fun to do that, you know? Like, it's always great to be, like, looking over the horizon and filling in the map and thinking, okay, so I need to come back here when I have this number of people with this number of Pikmin, and then I'll be able to progress on.
Yeah, and
totally
you said,
has that vibe.
You said it was, like, how satisfying it was, like, working your way around the map and stuff, and, like, but I just find, like, the actual process of watching the Pikmin like defeating an enemy, carrying them back, and or building a bridge or something, like, it's just the most satisfying thing to watch them just, you know, run between two points picking up like chunks of stuff, and or carrying like a massive enemy who's like dead back to the ship.
Oh boy, I've some couple of stories about things like that. I told you one of them,
yeah,
which was after I beat the giant flying moth boss. I think it's the second
boss. Yeah.
I sent all my Pikmin. I said, okay, go back to base, take all my things back. And so I started running off with my character all the way back to the beginning. And I took the long way around because I didn't know there was a shortcut. I get back to the ship and I'm like, where am I? Where's the Pikmin? They should have been here already. Why are they taking so long? I look at the map and I check back into the cave, and there is a shortcut out of the cave that leads directly to the ship. But in order to get there, you have to push this plastic paper bag thing down a hill. And without my commands to make them do it, they just fucking stood there like idiots. So on the one hand, the Pikmin are great, but they really are dumb. They can't do things on their own. So like, I did that boss perfectly. I lost 3 Pikmin total. I was like on fire. And then I lose 50 Pikmin from just being ignorant of the shortcut. And I was like, for fuck's sake, that's really dumb. Like, it's a stupid way to lose them. But hey, what are you going to do? You know, you learn from those mistakes. And now I know to pay attention to the maps a bit more. and not have that affect me.
Cool.
Well, but yeah, I'm totally engaged with it. I'm really enjoying it, and it is it's fun. It's a fun time, Bally.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you finally got around to giving it a go.
Totally. So the next game up on my list is one that you have also played, which I have been meaning to get to. And
shall we say that this game was number 5 of my top 10 games of 2014?
Sure.
And Pikmin 3 was number 3.
Yes, exactly. And I actually think I agree with that, to be honest. This game is The Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening, the first Game Boy game of Zelda. And it's interesting playing this in the midst of going through E3 and having the new Zelda game. Because
it's
I started it before E3 had begun. And I was getting in a Zelda mood, kind of, you know, in preparation for E3. But also, should we say this, Ballard? But you and I have a pact before Zelda Wii U comes out.
Yeah, go for it. Spill the beans.
So, Bally and I are planning to finish every Zelda that we haven't beaten yet, disregarding Zelda 1 and Zelda 2 for some reasons, because we don't want to play them.
We don't much like playing really, no. Really, really old NES games that aren't Mega Man.
We'll play Zelda 1 and 2 probably eventually, like, together or something.
Yeah, we'll touch on it.
Yeah, but aside from those two games, we want to finish every Zelda we haven't finished yet before Zelda Wii U, or Breath of the Wild. I'm still calling it Wii U / NX, before Breath of the Wild comes out. I decided in the sale, because Nintendo are having a massive E3 sale, to pick up Link's Awakening and both of the Oracle games. I know, Bally, you picked up the two Oracle games as well.
I did.
So we're prepared, and I have Majora's Mask 3D, which has been sitting in my room since, like, March, because there was an amazing deal on Amazon where it was, like, on a flash sale for £8, and I was like, holy shit, Majora's Mask 3D for £8? Yes, I'm getting that, so that's there and prepared. So really, I have to play through the two Oracle games and that, and that's pretty much me done.
And I'm the same.
Yeah, so we're both in the same boat now that I finished Link's Awakening. Funnily enough, I say in the same boat because it's Link's Awakening, and he doesn't have a boat. Well, he did, and then it got crashed on the sea. So I think before E3, I was really positive on Link's Awakening. I was, like, so into it. I spent a whole evening, the first 4 hours of playing, I just went straight through the first 3 dungeons, was loving it, thought it was really fun and super great. Like, super boiled down Zelda, very simplistic. Like, I love these mini screens that you have, and all the maps are made up of these, like, little segments that feel so... I don't know, there's something Minish Cap-y about it.
The overworld map or the dungeons.
I think both, to be honest. More so the overworld map, but there's something kind of homely about it with Link's Awakening. It's I feel like it's an eminently playable game, you know?
Yeah.
It's very easy to pick up.
It looks very old and clunky, but when you're actually playing it, it's not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all, but less so than you might think.
I think from a control standpoint, 100%. Like, it doesn't have the Link to the Past problem of swords being annoying to use and not hitting things you want them to hit. Like, the hitbox is way better. You can fucking spam the sword as quickly as you like in Link Between Worlds. That stuff is fantastic. I really enjoy the base mechanics of it. And I think the first few dungeons are really great. There's this nice ramp up. They're not too tough. But then things start to get more complicated and more obtuse, and... I know you have this owl who comes along and tells you little cryptic hints about stuff, but...
It's not enough.
There are some things that I just... I think are original Legend of Zelda culpable in terms of fucking where do I go and what do I do now. It does kind of become maze-like in some senses. The world is sometimes tough to navigate if you don't have the right equipment.
Yeah, definitely.
And not knowing, like, what areas you need to search for.
There's teleportation, but I almost ended up only using, like, a handful of the teleporters and not all of them. And I would remember very precisely where those two teleporters were and just basically go between those.
Yeah, I used, I think, all of them. I think there are 4 in total, maybe. Because there's one outside of Turtle Rock, if you go up the stairs and out of the dungeon. But those didn't help a huge amount. I mean, there's... like, they don't really pinpoint you to areas that I could remember, like, okay, what's around here and what is this relative to there? Like, I don't know. It's maybe just my own internal thing, but...
It is quite maze-like, though. I completely agree. It's like they make it maze-like on purpose because ultimately it is a very small world, and to give the illusion that it's much bigger, you know, they just overcomplicate it to...
Yeah, they kind of send you around in circles a lot of the time. Like the gravestone area, you have the crows before them and the gravestone. Like, it all seems like this circular, like, S shape that doesn't really make any sense. And
Yeah,
it kind of, like, threw me around in circles. It totally makes me want a remake of Link's Awakening where you can have the map on the bottom screen. Because there are certain instances where it's like, I know I need to go to this square for this sub-challenge, like, side quest, but, like, I have to keep pressing select to check the map, just constantly in there, like, okay, this screen to this screen, this screen, like, because it's so quick to move from one area to the next, it just becomes a little bit of a chore. And I think, you know, obviously the big complaint about this game is you have to open the start menu all the fucking time because you have to switch the buttons, and I got used to it, it sucks, but, like, and for me, it was really annoying, because my start button on my 3DS is kind of fucked. Like, it doesn't work properly, and I had an awkward time constantly opening
that. That must have been absolutely
it was a stress.
Draining during some of the dungeons.
Yeah, it was. It was a total stress on my gameplay. But, yeah, when I'm coming back to, like, some of the things that halted progression, the whole side quest of trading items...
It's a real pain in the arse.
Very
fetch questy.
I get that they like to litter these NPCs around the world and like have you give one person one thing to the next thing, but it doesn't feel very rewarding or interesting because ultimately these NPCs aren't very well drawn out as characters. They say a couple lines of dialogue and all they say is, I want this thing and now I'll give you this thing. And it doesn't seem there's much logic applied to it. It's like, how would I know that this guy who's dying on a mountain wants a pineapple that I get from a woman who I give a letter? Like, you know,
lot of the clues are incredibly obscure, and without a guide, you're kind of left thinking, how on earth did people do this before the internet? Like, what is going on?
I would be 100% fine with it if it was simply a side quest, but when it intersects with the main part of the story and you get to the bridge where you need the monkeys to make it, you get to those monkeys, and imagine a kid back in the day, obviously, you know, probably Nintendo Power had the guide for it, but without any kind of leeway, like, how the fuck do you know, okay, I need to get the bananas because you probably went to that guy's house.
A bridge
like, how
of
do
monkeys.
I get the bananas from that guy? Like, where do you go to start this chain of events that will eventually lead you to do that? It seems like, again, one of those old-school game design things that we are both very critical of. And I understand there are a lot of our listeners who grew up with these games and don't necessarily take that point of view because...
People who
grew
up with them, they think that these things make games longer and more epic and more rewarding. Whereas
we
often criticize them for, you know, dragging us around in a circle too much or something.
Totally. Yeah, especially like in the context of 2016, in the context of other games that have come after it, it feels antiquated in a way that kind of saps my enjoyment, you know? That stuff continued to be a little bit of a nuisance, especially like the whole thing with the rooster that is dead underneath the central, like...
This is all coming back to me now, it's really crazy. Like, between that and a bridge of monkeys, like, you kind of get the idea that this game is just... It's pretty unique. It is a little bit of a black sheep in the whole Zelda crowd when it comes to, like, these crazy random things.
Yeah, it's definitely wonky. And I think one of those wonky things is one of the things I actually like about it, which is the side-scrolling kind of areas.
Yeah, they're cool.
Obviously, there's a lot of throwbacks to different Nintendo properties and franchises because the whole conceit of Link's Awakening is it being a dream and, like, it, you know, not really existing in a reality that, you know, Zelda usually places itself in. So you can have the chain chomp that runs around with you, and you can have
monkeys.
You can have a guy who looks like Mario with a giant mustache and stuff like that, and it kind of fits in this weird ethereal like plane of, you know, this isn't quite Zelda as we know it. I think a lot of the bosses fall into that camp as well, where they're just like, side-scrolling bosses in particular are ones
they're
where
really,
I'm like, wow,
really
this was
good.
Good is an interesting word because I think they definitely look cool, but they don't really do anything that dynamic or interesting. Like, the fish boss that you fight, I just fucking spammed my sword a bunch and he died real quick, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time it came down to just spamming items and spamming my sword, and the challenges from those bosses were just not that great. That was one of the weaker parts, I thought. I thought they were unmemorable bosses, and I thought they were just not challenging in any way whatsoever. But I do think that the dungeons are pretty good on the most part. When it comes down to the later stuff, especially Dungeon 6 and 7...
they're pretty tough.
They're hard. They really tax you in a way that is, as I said before, the world being maze-like. Some of these dungeons are really maze-like. The Eagle's Tower, where you have to get the pillars. Yeah, the pillars, and you have
that
the ball,
is tough, yeah.
And you, like, it got to the point where I had the ball in a place, and you also are dealing with the switches where the orange blocks come up and down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to make sure that everything is in place for you to move around in perfect synchronicity with this ball to hit the pillars to get it across to the certain area. What if the ball falls down a hole, then it goes on to the other floor, or it respawns back at where it started? And then in order to get back to that place, I have to go through this whole chain of events to re-unlock that area and to set in motion the events that I want to take place again. It got to a point where I was like, no, fuck this. I'm just using a guide, and I'm just like letting it tell me where to go, because it's not worth the sweat and tears, and it wasn't worth it. So that's how I felt, honestly. It just became a chore, in the same way that the worst parts of A Link to the Past became a chore. Although I will say that these dungeons I respect a lot more than Link to the Past, because there's a much lower focus on combat. Most of the dungeons really don't have tough enemies, or barely any enemies at all. And
it's a lot
really
of puzzles.
To...
They're very puzzle heavy.
Yeah, they're very puzzle heavy. They're very, like, on a meta level, like, the whole dungeon in itself becomes a puzzle, like that whole Eagle's Tower, where you're moving this ball around and becoming, you know, this kind of crux point of it. It certainly kind of goes against the convention of utilizing items that you get within dungeons, I think more so than some other games, and relies on, like, dungeon-specific mechanics as opposed to that, which is cool and a change. Well, but...
And what did you think of the final boss?
It seemed like one of those things where I just looked up what was effective on each form, because otherwise it's trial and error. It's like, this giant blob is bouncing around. Oh, I used the magic powder on it. Why would I know that? I don't know. Maybe there's a boss early on where you do that, a slime or something, which I can't remember.
Ultimately, like, how on earth are you ever meant to know when you have to use magic powder? Like, it's just the most random thing that just does so many different things in this game. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that was a weird item that constantly kind of flummoxed me in various situations. But I think my one annoying thing about the dungeons is it's sometimes hard to know how everything is interconnected, in the sense that you have those sub areas that are the side scrolling bits, and you'll go down a staircase, go through a side scrolling area, and then come up and pop up on a different part of the map. And just remembering where those places start and end...
And they don't appear on your map, either.
Right, they don't show you how they link, what room links to which.
I got really stuck in some dungeons through corridors like that. Like, it's
absolutely
really confusing.
Like, it's fine when you find them the first time, but it's like, when you are inevitably retraversing those areas and going back under, it's like, fuck, where was that place? Because I remember it in my brain that it was an underground area, but I don't know where it is relative to where I am now. I think a lot of our complaints are because of the time this game was made in, and because of the hardware it was created on. And I have to say, for a Game Boy game, despite all these flaws, it is incredibly impressive. It's so expansive in its scope. The fact that there are like 8 full dungeons plus the DX version that has this bonus color dungeon that you get to unlock, it's really a wealth of Zelda chucked in there. They really did cram it all, and it's impressive, you know, on a technical level, you know, for what they were working with. So I'll give it merit there. I think, like, certainly it's much more fun in the opening areas, but It kind of has a bit of a downward slope for me. To be honest, I think the last dungeon is really fantastic. I thought Turtle Rock was great, and I really thought that it was bright and colourful and looked different from everything else, and it didn't suffer quite as much from the obtuseness of the Eagle's Tower. But overall, I think it's a really good Zelda game. I don't think it's up there in my favorites, but yeah. I'm glad I played it, and I think that it's a good game.
Before you say any more, because I was about to ask you something like, you know, do you prefer it to Link to the Past? I was going to say
yes.
That, you know, with our whole process, as you described, we're going to try and play every Zelda before Breath of the Wild comes out.
Yes.
I think to match that, it might be quite a cool thing to do is, you know, before Breath of the Wild and the NX to actually do, you know, let's do a combined order. And we can have a real
yes.
proper discussion on how all these Zeldas fit together.
Yeah, that is the end game for this. Is once we've played them all, we're going to make an ordered list of our top Zelda games. I think that'll be a fun process. Might be a bit easier. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one for sure.
We'll see.
We'll get to that. But that is going to be our first segment. So we are going to join you after the break with some emails that you have sent in, and we'll be answering them as best we can. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome back to the show. It's time for some emails, and seeing as we went so in depth with what we've been playing, we've got a couple lined up right now, a couple of your emails. But as we always say on the show, if you want to send in more emails, send them to our address, please. Our address is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That's thisnintendolife@gmail.com. Our first email this week is from Terence, who's from North Carolina. Hey, MBZ and Bally, I'd like to know your opinion on Nintendo's performance at E3. I'll give you mine with a pesky letter grade. Before that, I'd like to give you my input on a point you guys made about Zelda somewhat reinventing itself. I agree that innovation is great and Zelda could use it, but I do think this game is taking a risk and it may or may not pay off. Just ask the Call of Duty community, who hates the new futuristic stuff, or the Final Fantasy community, who really dislike the direction 13 took and the way it appears to be going now. Anyway, my letter grade for Nintendo would be a C-. Zelda is fantastic, but we still don't know when the real version will be released. We still have nothing this year, and Nintendo made a massive mistake with Pokemon, as their presentation was horribly ill-placed and ineffective. Finally, your crown jewel, the NX, is as much of a mystery now as it was a year ago. What do you guys think of the overall state of Nintendo right now? Sorry for the long question, and keep up the great show.
So, obviously, we're going to be talking some more about E3 and our post-impressions in the next segment, but I think this is an interesting one because there are lots of podcasts. I think, you know, mainly RFN is where I got this idea from, of grading, you know, aspects of companies and aspects of Nintendo specifically.
Do you have a grade?
Well, it's weird for us because I think the grading system is very much a US-based thing, right? Like, that's something that comes out of America a lot of the time, is they use letter grades to grade people, and that's something we don't do as often. But I think we can do it, and we can maybe tackle what we thought of Nintendo's E3. But before we do that, maybe let's address some of the stuff he's saying about Zelda and the potential innovation it has. And I want to focus on... He talks about... The contrast between, say, Call of Duty going futuristic and Final Fantasy with 13 and stuff like that. And I think you can maybe draw a very thin comparison there, but taking a look at it, Call of Duty clearly has been going in this direction for the last 2-3 years. You can see this gradual build-up from, you know, Advanced Warfare onwards, where they are going to move into that direction. So people being angry about that should have seen that coming a mile away, because honestly, it's quite obvious. And when you're talking about discontent with Call of Duty, I think it's been on a downward slide for a pretty long time at this point. So I don't find that all that surprising. On the other hand, with Final Fantasy 13, people will argue that that's the point where it fell off a cliff, but I'd say other people would argue that 10 is the point at which it started going down. You know, people's complaints about 13 being linear, you could just as well levy those criticisms at Final Fantasy 10. Then they had the MMO, which was 11, and 12, again, took these MMO aspects that a lot of people didn't like. I know people love 12, but it wasn't as well received as, you know, stuff in the past. So again, I think Final Fantasy was on a kind of downward trajectory going into 13. Zelda, I don't think, is as much. You can make the argument that, you know, Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword perhaps sliding somewhat, and I think that obviously many people dislike Skyward Sword a great deal, but then you have Link Between Worlds, which is this giant peak, you know? It's this really shining crown jewel that Zelda, the most recent Zelda, is that. And I know it's based off Link to the Past, and all these people like to make arguments that it's basically the same game. I 100% refute those, because it absolutely isn't. It's unique in its own right, and it's fantastic. And taking all those great elements from Link Between Worlds, you know, the non-linearity and all that stuff, and placing that trajectory onto Zelda Wii U, which has not only got amazing buzz, but looks like it's going to fulfill a lot of these promises, I cannot agree with Terrence here. I just do not see it going in a similar direction. They are taking criticism on board, and although potentially this is a area where they could fall flat on their face because they are cribbing from other places, what we've seen so far has done nothing but reassure me that they are not going to do that and they are actually aiming for much higher planes.
Yeah, I said this in detail last time on when we did our reactions to Zelda on the last episode. And essentially, I've not changed my opinion. Like I love it when Nintendo do take a gamble because it often pays off. Yes, in many ways, Skyward Sword was quite different and a lot of fans did reject it. There were some issues I personally had with it, although MBZ, I know you like that game a great deal. But I think that Zelda is such an entity that just it's always evolving, it's always changing. Nintendo never or rarely fall into the trap with a series like Zelda where they make one good one and they say, you know what, that did so well, we'll just replicate it and do another one. They always mix something up drastically. Even the games between, say, Ocarina and Majora's Mask, although they're using similar engines, the actual mechanics within the games are very different, and like Majora's Mask is so unique. So I don't think that you'll ever see Nintendo, you know, play it too easy with Zelda. Obviously, Twilight Princess, it's almost like that game came from fan pressure, many argue, where there was such an urge to get back to the style of Ocarina of Time with Wind Waker following that game. So it's really just, I'm always keen for Zelda to evolve and change, and I really don't see the Zelda community reacting too badly to this game. Quite the opposite. I think this is it's got everything going for it, the Zelda, that could make it one of the best in the series.
I think there's always going to be a vocal group who will stand strong and say, this is not the Zelda I wanted, this is going in a different direction, and is not the kind of game I want Zelda to be. And that will always exist. That will exist for every community, and yeah. You're always going to have dissenters. But I think the vast majority, and you can just tell from everyone who has seen the game and has talked about it, that the vast majority of people don't see it as going in a negative direction. I think it is quite the opposite.
People are hyped.
Yeah, people are very excited. So let's maybe give our ranking then of Nintendo. I think that I really wanted them to show a bunch at E3, and obviously we didn't get that. But Zelda did blow my socks off. And it was amazing, but I think you cannot go any higher than a B on this. And so that's why I'm going to give them a B. I think you obviously, they are kind of flawless because the one game they showed, but you can't just have one game. I think there needed to be more. Despite everything that we saw, I think Nintendo can do better at E3 and should do better, and I can't willingly say that they deserve anything above a B. That is the utmost I can give them, considering the only thing they showed was Zelda.
I think that I'm gonna I've only graded them just based on my gut instinct of how good or bad I felt after the show, and especially, say, compared to 2015, where we were both really, really bummed out and not feeling too great about the future of Nintendo with that digital event. So, I mean, last year I would have been as low as maybe C- to a D, whereas this year I just felt great. Like, it just felt fantastic. And obviously, you're right, our expectations were lower because they announced that we were getting so little this E3. But ultimately, I'm going to go as high as an A-. I really think that I just felt great and positive about the future of Nintendo from what they showed us at this year's E3.
Okay. I think that pretty much covers a lot of it. He said, you know, stuff about them making mistakes with Pokemon, which I wholeheartedly agree with.
Definitely.
Thanks, Terrence, for the question. Let's move on to the next one.
Our next question is from Austin, who's from Spring Hill, Florida, near Tampa. Hello, MBZ and Bally. First off, I want to say I'm a long-time fan of MBZ, and I've been listening since the Now You're Playing With Power days, since the first episode, to be specific. So it's been a long time coming. But on to my question. Are there any games that you want to try or complete, but you're too intimidated by? I thought this after suggesting to MBZ on a recent video to play Dark Souls, to which he replied, "It scares me. I felt this way about Metroid Prime 2 for almost 10 years, and while it's my least favourite in the Prime series, I'm really glad I finally completed it. Also, a completely unrelated question, have either of you played Okami, and if not, why have you not played it? I feel like both of you, Bally especially, with his love of unique art styles and music, would dig this game. Thanks for the hours of great podcasts, and keep up the good work."
So I like Austin's starting a trend, maybe, of long-time listener, first-time writer, which I would like to see more of if you've been
definitely.
Listening. If you've been listening since
cool.
the Now You've Been Playing With Power days and you haven't written in, follow Austin's lead here and send us an email, because we always like to hear from people who have been quiet in the background, in the darkness. But let's get on to the question then, Bally. I just want to clarify something here. When he asked me this question on the video about Dark Souls,
scared versus scared,
right? So he says, you know, why don't you play Dark Souls? I said, quote unquote, it scares me. That's not necessarily because the game and the mechanics scare me. It's because I'm a massive horror noob and I hate anything scary and environments that make me uncomfortable. And Dark Souls is just a dark looking with monsters kind of game. And I just, when I play games, I don't want to have a uncomfortable feeling. You know, I play them to relax and enjoy myself, and stuff like that and horror games really don't put me in that mood. I would love to play Dark Souls if it took place in the setting of like a happy unicorn land and it retained all those hardcore mechanics of, like, you know, the combat and all that shit. That I really want to try that and dig it, but I would not do that unless it's in a setting that makes me feel comfortable, which is why I'm hoping that maybe Zelda is kind of cribbing some of that stuff, because it's a much more bright and colorful place. So that's what I meant by it scaring me. So I guess in some senses, yeah, I'm too intimidated to play things like Resident Evil and such because of the horror elements.
I don't like horror either. I'm maybe more, slightly less adverse to it than you are, MBZ. I'm happy to play games that put me in intimidating situations. I don't like, you know, massive jump scares and all this. I don't like that.
Yeah,
all
fuck
the time.
That. Fuck anything to do with jump scares.
Yeah, and like I don't like the horror genre, but I don't mind very dark games that might be, I don't know, a bit creepy or something. Like Metroid Prime 2 is a great example. That is a pretty creepy game in many aspects. It's got, you know, zombies, it's got a couple of jump scares arguably. And you're generally just in very dark and uncomfortable environments for a lot of the time, and I can really appreciate a game like that. Would I ever try a game like Dark Souls? Possibly. I don't actually think it's necessarily a horror game. It's just a game.
It's
that
not.
Has,
no, but I. Yeah. Well, the kind of point I'm driving at is the setting makes me uncomfortable.
Absolutely, and that's where I would differ. Where I would be up for playing a game like Dark Souls. It's not a horror game, like I said. It's just a pretty dark game with some creepy stuff going on.
Sure.
And yeah, I'd be interested in trying that. And I know that's maybe also an area where you're maybe less keen to try out a game like the Metroid Prime series.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of, you know, eerie atmosphere. aside from that side of scariness, like intimidating games, I find RPGs so intimidating compared to MBZ. They're hard for me to. Don't get me wrong. Once I get into them, I can really plow through games, and like I've definitely done that with, you know, Fire Emblem Awakening or maybe Fire Emblem 7, where I think I did surprise you at points with those games, MBZ, where I'd be I'd come
and
back.
Even
and say,
those
oh, just,
aren't full on RPGs; they're strategy based ones.
They're strategy based, and I definitely plowed through the first Xenoblade quite quickly in general, for me at least, and I just they scare me in the sense that it's a lot to take in. It's
a lot of systems
commitment.
And mechanics to get under
a
your
load
head.
Of systems. And ultimately, I always like to try and play smaller, shorter game experiences along with a longer one. So right now, I'm thinking about starting a game like Zelda Oracle of Ages, but I'm holding off because I'm working my way through Fire Emblem Fates, for example. So, and in the meantime, I'm happy to play smaller games, but I never try to tackle two big games at once. That's what intimidates me the most, I'd say, is like game length.
Yeah, no, that's totally a good one. You can certainly get bogged down by doing stuff like that. I feel maybe other elements I would get intimidated by, something like The Witness, perhaps. Obviously, there's the whole motion sickness thing with me, which is just an automatic, like,
that's
I can't
play this.
That's
a whole other discussion, isn't it?
A whole other discussion. But I think a puzzle game that is infamously quite challenging and difficult, and me maybe having the worry that I wouldn't be able to push my way through it and, you know, maybe be intimidated by things like that. I mean, there aren't that many, like, super high profile puzzle games. I think that's like one in recent memory that has stuck out, but I feel like I don't know if I would want to just jump in and tackle that straight away, because it has maybe an intimidating quality to it, with just the infamous nature of what people have been talking about in relation to it.
But yeah, I think that, you know, it is important to mix up the style of games you play. If you're playing a lot of games, as we definitely do, I think it is important to mix up the style of games you play, and constantly try and keep it fresh. There's nothing worse than, you know, I'm halfway through, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X, and I just thought, look, I don't want to burn out on this. I just need to put it away, not play it for a while, and come back to it later when I'm more motivated, have a bit more time, and just go for it. And, like, I think that's often an important thing to do. Like, we're ultimately doing this because we enjoy it, and it should never feel like a chore, and it should never feel overly frustrating, because don't worry, most games can get frustrating.
Yeah.
But You just gotta mix it up, and don't just play the same thing again and again.
Okay, before we close out, he asks us about Okami. Neither of us have played Okami, but it's a thing that we probably should at some point. Our good friend Ali T is an Okami expert. He's played it multiple times. maybe one day we'll get him on to talk about it, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly a game that obviously very Zelda inspired, something that I would like to play at some point. It's on the list.
Like to play it as well. I definitely think it's probably quite tricky to get a hold of these days, though. So
I don't know. You'll probably get a hold of the Wii copy relatively easily.
Might have to give that a go.
Have to do a bit of research on that. We'll get back to it. We'll get back to it. I think that's going to wrap us up for emails. Again, not many this week because we kind of overshot on the first segment. But we will return after the break with our third and final segment, and we'll be discussing kind of things about E3 and wrapping it up. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Hello everyone, before we get back into the show, I just wanted to let you know that there were some audio problems within this final segment. We had a guest on, who was John Bernardo, who was gracious to lend his time to the podcast to talk with us about E3. Unfortunately, in the process, his audio file was somehow corrupted. There's a lot of skipping audio, and as a result, trying to Frankenstein this thing back together was not the most seamless task in the world. However, I have given it my best shot. I've made it try to sound good. When you hear a lot of John's audio, it will be skipping about. You should be able to understand most of what he's saying. I've tried to make it make sense. But if you don't, unfortunately, that's just the way of it. Hopefully we'll have him on sometime again. And hopefully this will not be a recurring thing, because I do not like editing a bunch of stuff which is hard to stitch together. Nonetheless, I've put my best hand to work, and this is what we have. So hopefully you enjoy it nonetheless, and let's get back to the show. Alright, everyone, welcome back to the third and final segment of this podcast today. And we are luckily not joined only by Bally in this final segment, but we have a very special guest with us. And that guest is John Bernardo. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, sir. Much appreciated.
Now, people don't know who you are. We've talked back and forth on Twitter, but if you want to maybe tell people some stuff you do, some projects you work on. I know you've done some podcasting before, so what are you involved in?
Right now, I'm taking a break from podcasting while I try to figure out some new stuff, but I currently had two shows before, the Media Clash podcast, where we talked about video games, movies, and TV shows, and we had another show called Nice Try Bad Guy, where we discussed bad guys' plots and why they failed. And at the time, yeah, I'm just floating in the interwebs trying to figure out what to do next, and I'm just a big nerd.
Very good. Very admirable. We're all big nerds here, of course. You'll feel very much at home. Of course, you're also part of the Kind of Funny community, a fellow best friend.
100%. Yes, sir.
Got a lot of that in common, which is very cool. And you're going to join us here to wrap up some E3 stuff and talk about what Nintendo did and maybe talk about what some other companies did as well.
I do love some Nintendo, though.
Yeah, I love absolutely. Nintendo. Look,
who doesn't?
You can't be in the games industry and not be somewhat a fan of Nintendo.
Yeah, you got to be a cold-hearted asshole.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm not supposed to swear. I'm sorry.
Look, we are marked explicit on iTunes.
Okay, good.
So go ahead.
The cat's
and,
out the bag.
Shitty titties.
Yeah. So we're going to kick things off. Maybe wrap up a little bit of Zelda. John, I just want to hear some of your thoughts on Zelda. How did you feel about it when it was first unveiled? And what do you think of some of the new gameplay stuff?
It was honestly everything I thought it was going to be, and more. I don't know how to express how amazing this looks. Like this, it literally looks like Skyrim Zelda, right? That's like what people have been saying before. That's what it looks like, and it's. I'm glad that Nintendo has taken their time with this because before we were worried that it was just going to be too dead, but you can see, even though there's not something happening at every corner, you can definitely tell that the world is alive. And I don't know if you guys heard this, but they have a bunch of employees from Monolith, that means Xenoblade, are working on the game as well. So that right there just got me really excited because, as you know, sir, me and you both loved Xenoblades, right? So
indeed.
That game was just fantastic. And if this game has anything, if it has the scale and the depth of what Xenoblade had, Xenoblade and Zelda together, it's like a dream come true. So it just looks like, and I'm a late Zelda fan. Like, I've been playing it all my life, but I've only became like a hardcore fan really late in my life. So like everything that they've been building for the last 30 years come together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from. I think on the point of Monolith being involved, it's very exciting because we know, having played Xenoblade, that they are so capable of creating worlds that are eminently explorable and have stuff just filled there for you to discover and be involved with. And I think that taking members of that team and having them with Zelda just allows a level of depth that maybe wouldn't have been there without them. So yeah, and it's really exciting, and I think Bally, after maybe a week of cooling down, have you felt that maybe you've cooled on Zelda, or are you still as high on it as you were before?
Yeah, I'm just glad a week has passed, and that just means that it's 1 week less that we have to wait until this game comes out. So that's a positive, right? I've been very busy this whole week, but I've kind of not delved back into some footage, but I definitely think that in the coming weeks, and you know, until the game comes out, I'm going to be looking at that footage quite a bit, to be honest.
I'm sure that Game Explainer are going to have a hell of a time just analysing it.
Oh,
for the next
six months. I look forward to some of their analysis videos. Not a fan of all their stuff, but their analysis stuff.
It's not like they have much else to talk about, is there?
Yes. You know? They've been kind of shoehorned into a corner by Nintendo.
Yeah, totally. I think all of us have been, really. Anyone who talks about Nintendo is just going to be like, well, there's Zelda and there's other stuff too, but it's hard to get more excited about that.
I will say this. Zelda will either be the last Wii U game I get or the first NX game I get. Like, because who knows what NX is.
Yeah,
right?
You were saying on Twitter you hadn't quite made up your mind yet as to whether you were going to jump in with NX or wait and have the Wii U version.
NX might be my, because I can only get one, right? So NX might be my next one. Otherwise, I'm going to keep my Wii U and wait for Zelda.
Just on an unrelated point then, or just perhaps actually related to your console of choice, would the whole idea of NX courting third parties and bringing all these other games on influence that decision in a major way?
If I had to pick through the big hitters, it would be Sony, right? But it all depends on what Nintendo. I would have to jump on that. I would have to go straight with NX all the way. But if it's something, get their third party game on there, which I really, let's be honest, we all know Nintendo's history, they're not sharing. Seem like those kind of people after all these years.
So there were some other things that we were kind of looking at during E3 from Nintendo's side. That was, of course, on day two of Treehouse, where they showed off a few different games, and we'll maybe run down a few of them and maybe give our thoughts. I think the first one to talk about is probably Paper Mario, because this one is basically going to be their big holiday title, obviously aside from Pokemon Sun and Moon. This is the Wii U game that everyone's looking out for, and I think there's a lot of mixed opinion on it. I think mostly people who are big fans of the Paper Mario franchise are perhaps annoyed with it being much more of a sticker star sequel and using a lot of those same mechanics. John, you were saying that you were kind of interested in this one, though.
I actually just recently beat Paper Mario 64, and I know I'm way behind on my Nintendo. I actually am really looking forward to the Wii version, the Wii U version. Sometimes RPGs can drag on a little too much. I'm not attached to the way original Paper Mario was, so I think I won.
Fair enough. I think it's interesting because you now have the divergence between the two series of the Mario and Luigi RPGs and now Paper Mario. And I think what Nintendo want to do is start to move Paper Mario in a different direction and make it a different style of game, which I appreciate, and they're not having to like duplicate and have multiple RPGs with Mario on them. I just think that unfortunately, there are a lot of people who grew up with 64 and Thousand Year Door, and that style of game is something they want to return to, and it doesn't look like they're getting it. So, I get where people are coming from, but it's also cool to see them doing something different and not necessarily sticking to the same stuff. But it does look gorgeous. Bally, have you managed to see some footage of Paper Mario?
I mean, I've not seen a ton of footage from E3, but I've obviously seen like when it was revealed and stuff, and you know, Paper Mario is not a series that I've ever tried out, and it's something I definitely do want to try. But this whole like idea that the system is copying Sticker Star, I'm not really fully well versed with the whole Sticker Star system, so I don't know whether that's better or worse. Like, I understand that it's getting criticized a lot, but yeah, I'm not sort of super excited about trying out this one in particular. If I jump in, I'm probably going to go try the N64 version on Virtual Console first.
Yeah, it seems like a likely candidate for us to maybe revisit sometime soon. So, but some other stuff that they were talking about, Dragon Quest VII, which I just quickly watched a bit of gameplay from. The only Dragon Quest game I've played is Dragon Quest IX on DS, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was fantastic RPG. VII is looking great. It's a remake of a PS1 game that came out eons ago, and not many people have played it. It's one of the most underplayed Dragon Quest games, and there's this full, I think, relocalization of it, it's just looking nice. It's looking like a thing that I can pick up and dig my teeth into, a meaty RPG. I think the one decision there is whether to pick up Dragon Quest VII or to wait for Dragon Quest VIII, which I think a lot of people hold in higher regard and say is the better game. John, do you have any experience with the Dragon Quest series?
Never have ever played one. Again, not because I don't want to, it's just I've never had the opportunity. VIII is the one that's going to be out for NX, right?
No. So for the NX one, if that comes true, will be 11. 8 on 3DS is a remake of a PS2 game. Which is a beloved classic, and a lot of people hold in very, very high regard. So that's the one that I'm maybe like making the decision, because I don't think picking up two massive Dragon Quest games in the same year is the greatest idea. So we'll see how that shakes out. But that stuff's looking good. Looking forward to it. The next weird one was Mario Party Star Rush, which I believe was announced during E3, and we didn't know this was coming before. But this is... Bally, can you just maybe give your thoughts here? Because you watched a little bit of gameplay. It's fucking weird. This is a weird Mario Party.
So, like, I bought a game a long time ago when I was a big fan of Monopoly on the GameCube called, like, Monopoly Party.
Yeah.
And the whole selling point of this game was that everyone would roll the dice at the same time and you could take your turn at the same time, and it basically sped up the whole game.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've just sort of copied that mechanic to a degree. Like, everyone rolls their dice for the Mario Party at the same time, and it just feels like you get into the minigames faster, which are ultimately the more enjoyable part of Mario Party. I don't... Like, we've said this before, MBZ, but, like, Mario Party is just so stale in our minds. We're so sick of it. We need online multiplayer. And it's on 3DS. It could be possible, but I'm not sure if this game has online multiplayer or not.
I doubt they'll add it, because for some reason they don't. It boggles my mind that they have put into this series, which would be like, you look at the landscape today of YouTube and Twitch and all this stuff. Like, Mario Party would kill on those services with friends playing over the internet. It would absolutely, you know, it would make a huge splash, and yet they consistently deny access to online play.
If you're using the artwork from some spaghetti hoops that are Nintendo branded, like,
yeah,
you're kind of worried whether they'll bother to implement online functionality. So
yeah.
I'm not gonna gamble and say they are, because they're not.
MZ, I'm pretty sure I said this on Twitter a million times. You'll even look at the background and it's just...
Yes. It really does look like they just dragged it and dropped it into Photoshop and did zero editing.
Like, black, yellow, put stars, do something.
It really shows their lack of confidence in this game, and I think this is just a general theme that Nintendo's lineup for the rest of this year is very, very poor, and so they, you know, they're not really putting their best foot forward.
Do we know if it's Hudson again?
I would assume so. I don't know if they've changed at all. Like, it seems like they just crank on those games again and again.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to work for a developer that has that job of just cranking out sequels to this franchise that people generally don't really care about anymore. It just
look on the bright side. It prolongs the Giant Bomb Mario Party Party series.
It does, yes, so, you're correct.
You know,
yes,
like,
although
that's
have
the best
said
thing
that
it.
For the Mario Party Party series, they're only doing mainline console entries.
Boo.
So unfortunately, we'll not get a Star Rush. But so let's move on from the hellish nature of Mario Party to a brand new 3DS game that was announced, a new IP, in fact, from Grezzo. Grezzo, the people behind the remakes of Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time on 3DS, and they have finally been set loose on their own to make their own RPG, and it is called Ever Oasis. This is very interesting to me. I looked at some footage today, and it seems like a mashup of elements of kind of things like Animal Crossing, and then you have action RPG stuff with, you know, a lock-on system that is Zelda-esque and kind of more action-y based elements, but also some kind of puzzle stuff going on with character abilities and dungeons. And it has a very chibi art style. It runs very smoothly. It looks very nice. John, have you had any chance to see some stuff with Ever Oasis?
Yeah, I've been watching it. It's cute. I don't know where the 3DS is going. If they really felt they needed to launch a new brand now, like, there's a lot of cool things. There's, like, I just saw something that looks like a little homage to Metroid, where they turned out there's some Zelda in here. I saw a little bit of a Metroid influence. There's a lot of...
Yeah, it totally has a much more hardcore feel in terms of, you know, the dungeon exploration and everything, and maybe people would be put off by something that maybe looks more like Animal Crossing or, I don't know, Fantasy Life or something along those lines. yeah, it's definitely one I want to keep my eye on. So yeah, I think that's pretty much the Treehouse stuff. Bali, quickly, how about we revisit a couple predictions that were not Zelda related?
I'm going to be honest. Out of my two predictions, I predicted Mother 3, and I thought they were going to talk about Pikmin 4, and I was completely wrong. They didn't mention either.
Do you think that means Pikmin 4 is now a guaranteed NX game?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say at this point. My predictions, of course, Bali, I was the same as you. I predicted some Mother 3 action. Did not get that, unfortunately. But
your reverse psychology didn't work on your next prediction.
Yeah, so my last prediction was that Nintendo would not show Metroid Prime Federation Force. They would not mention the word Metroid. It would not be anywhere. And I'm pretty sure, I haven't watched all the Treehouse footage, but I'm pretty sure no one ever said the word Metroid, and Metroid Prime Federation Force was not shown at all as a demo.
But you see, the whole point of this prediction was that they were going to surprise you with a 2D Metroid Dread or something. And
well, that was a sly hope in the background.
It's just not happened. It's just not happened.
No. It hasn't. So yeah, God, they really are sending that game out to die, aren't they? They don't want to take any internet backlash about it. It seems like it's just gonna sink. I don't think that game's gonna sell well at all. I think people are gonna pan it. So before we wrap up, I thought it'd be nice to go around and talk about some things that weren't Nintendo E3, because boy, there were a lot of those. Lots of announcements from Microsoft, Sony, and all the other third parties. Maybe just go around and give a couple of our picks. John, start with you. What took your fancy from Sony?
That was the only one that I watched from start to finish, and I think they nailed it. The only thing were this holiday. Here's this game this holiday. Sony, here's all these amazing games, 2017.
Or even no release date. I don't think they actually put release dates at the end of things like God of War or like Days Gone and things like that. They were just like, here's a game, it'll come out at some point, please be excited. And I get that approach. I think for E3, that might be the right approach, because E3 is about the buzz and the hype and just generating to get people excited. Whereas what Microsoft did maybe didn't get people as excited, but hey, we can play ReCore in September. Gears of War 4 is coming out in October. Like, these are real games that are happening and will be on store shelves. Sony have Last Guardian, and then what else? I know Horizon is early next year, but like, it does seem like they're just shooting further and further out in the future.
And that's what I mean. Like, it's, well, no, actually, I think they did something at the end where it says 2017 in development.
Yeah, I mean, we already have Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is inevitably going to turn into that.
But if I'm going to stop picking and I'm going to picking at their shit and I'm going to actually pick something I like, it's going to be Sucker Punch. And while I love Infamous, I do love Infamous, but gameplay looked amazing. God of War, I expected. I didn't expect it. The Last of Us, God of War.
Yeah, basically. I think the funny thing about Sony's press conference was you really see this kind of Naughty Dogification of all their franchises. Like, you have Days Gone, which is clearly very Last of Us inspired, and God of War taking that perspective too. It seems like they want to start creating these very popular third-person action games, and Naughty Dog have been so successful for them that I can't really blame them, to be honest.
I was so turned off by, what's it called? Days Gone?
Yes, yeah.
I was like, what's the twist in this gameplay? What's about to happen? Like, I didn't understand why everyone was like, oh, it looks so cool. It's like, are you kidding me? This is the 30 millionth zombie game.
Yeah, I think maybe from a tech perspective it was cool because of all those zombies on the screen, like very fluid motion. And that was the one thing that stuck out to me. But everything else was like, yeah, this seems very generic.
It honestly would have been better if it was just a Sons of Anarchy gang type game. And then and we don't have to deal with the zombies. At least it would have been somewhat different.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that biking stuff plays into the final product. What do you think of Horizon?
If I could have those two games, one after the other, I'd be done with gaming. That's all I would need. Horizon, honestly, I heard one thing, and this got me excited. There's the create a job thing. Do whatever. So you click create a job, and it'll create a quest to find three leaves, and you're done.
Yeah, it basically removes the problem in RPGs of needing a specific object or item or collectible, and giving you some direction. I think that's one of my biggest complaints about Xenoblade Chronicles X is, hey, go collect 7 of these things. I don't know where they are. Just run around for a bit, you know? Like, it was a bloody nightmare to do some of those side quests. And just solving that problem so simply by saying, okay, we're just going to create a dedicated quest for this one thing, genius. Like, it's one of those things that you'll think back on, like, in years' time and think, man, everyone's doing this now. Like, this was so obvious. Why didn't people do it before?
No, 100%. And I do agree with Xeno. Like, with Xeno, anytime I would finish the quest and just go, all right, I'll get that. But, yeah, that is definitely something that I guarantee 100%.
Bally, you were pretty enamored with Horizon as well.
I don't think there's a more awesome setting to a game. I think the idea of an apocalypse in the future and then sort of mankind is restarting again. So there's like all this tech out there, but ultimately there's none of the, you know, the infrastructure of globalization. Like, they're all starting from scratch. And I just think the look of those mechanical beasts is incredible, and it is hilarious how similar, with sort of the tech elements in Zelda, like how similar aspects are to those two games. And it's interesting that they both kind of, most people's game of the show is one of those two games. Like, I believe Giant Bomb gave it to Horizon.
They did, yes.
And then obviously IGN, they gave it to Zelda. So, like, I think it's exciting. Like, it's a really impressive game, and just seeing it in motion is like, you know, I should probably try and get a PS4. it's really impressive.
Let's talk about Scorpio.
Very quickly, before we mention that, can I also just say that VR Star Wars looks like the most awesome thing ever?
Sure.
But all the VR things were sold as, like, experiences. So it's a shame that they're kind of demos and short things, and it felt like the only long game was going to be, you know, Fallout 4 VR version.
Right.
But just 10-20 minutes of flying in like an X-Wing in VR, I just have to try that. I think that will be incredible.
I definitely think VR is too expensive. Not that I'm saying they don't have the right to charge that. Obviously, the cost sounds right, but like, if for you, for all three of us, we don't have PS4s into the game.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, why would you invest so much in making a game like that when the audience who owns VR is so narrow? And like, they're just, VR is in this really strange situation that, I mean, we'll get to in other episodes and so on, but it's just so in flux.
We'll see how it goes. Certainly at the moment, experiences are what they have, and Bally and I are going to be at Gamescom in August, and we're going to be able to try some VR for the first time, hopefully. So we will see, finally, if I am able to stand it, or if I will be horribly motion sick, like I probably will be, because I get motion sick real easy in these first-person games, let alone VR. Yeah, I'm screwed. Yeah, basically. Doesn't work for everyone, and I am the person who it doesn't work for, most likely. Maybe let's talk about what Microsoft did in terms of Scorpio. Was there anything aside from their hardware announcements that you wanted to pick out from their conference? I was kind of interested in Recall. I think it looked pretty neat. It was definitely much more of a budget title than I expected.
Which one's that again?
So Recall is like the robot dog where you take out the different cores inside, and there's this grappling hook stuff. It's from Armature, who are former Metroid Prime developers. They made Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate, which was the 2D Metroid-style Batman game on 3DS and Vita.
Whole lot of grapple.
Yes, a whole lot of grapple. So that looked pretty cool to me. It definitely isn't going to blow my mind, probably, but I'm down for it.
The whole Scorpio, it is a more powerful system. I feel like Microsoft's always been pretty good with saying it's coming out, right? So it's launching in August, right? So I feel like, I liked how PlayStation didn't show it. It's like, see the point in saying it now, because you're causing this confusion. If anything, you're halting sales of your own system, and they're with games to show us the reason. But I'm still not too sold on this whole, the only reason I'd be excited.
Right, yeah. No, absolutely. That's a big thing that a lot of people, I'm sure, are interested in doing. But I think from Microsoft's point of view, of course, they are not doing that well in terms of hardware sales. And I think the reason they've put Scorpio out there and the reason they're floating it this early is, number one, because they know that it's a more powerful system than what Sony has in the works right now. Neo is tracking at maybe, everyone's talking teraflops right now, which is a stupid thing that most people don't understand. But Neo supposedly has 2 teraflops of power, whereas Scorpio has 6. So it is like an extreme power difference. And so I think they wanted to announce first to get out ahead of Sony to maybe intimidate them somewhat. But also it just speaks to Microsoft generally moving into the space of, hey, we're kind of just wanting to sell you software more than hardware because of their Windows 10 initiative and having all their first-party games going to PC as well. They are saying, okay, it's now open. Everyone can have it as long as you have these systems. We have cross-play, we have cross-buy across like Xbox and PC, and they just want more people to buy their stuff. And if Scorpio pleases a certain crowd, that's fine. That crowd will be satiated, but they're going to be able to capture that PC market in a way that they haven't done before.
That is true. That is good that, you know, you can buy it once. You technically, all you need is a PC, and you can play all the Xbox One games. A powerful PC, but all you need is a PC. So that is nice because, you know, there's a lot of PC gamers out there, and look at the best of both worlds. So if I was a PC gamer, I'd definitely be all Xbox. I feel like there's not much to go for. Like Gears of War 4, that's at least with... It's funny because we both have blanks of war on both systems, right? And yes. God of War, you know, it may be a copy of The Last of Us for to an extent, but at least it's... This is Gears of War.
Yeah, you take a look at both those series and you see one going in a very risky direction that is exciting, and the other being like, yeah, we're just going to do the same thing, which I'm sure fans of the series will be like, yeah, I just want more Gears, but it doesn't get people as jazzed as what, you know, Santa Monica are doing with God of War.
If I'm between Xbox and PS4, which I am, I'm going to look at the Xbox, I'm like, oh, it's actually a little bit cheaper in Canada, and then I'm like, oh, that means I'm going to miss out on Ratchet & Clank, I'm going to miss out on The Last of Us, etc. What am I missing out on Xbox? So.
Yeah, I think Microsoft have some decent first-party exclusives, but yeah, it's hard to pick and choose there. There's certainly, I think it's different experiences for different folks for sure. Bally, when we're thinking about NX and how this system is probably going to be a bit more powerful, but not crazy, do you worry about Scorpio and Neo and the fact that just as Nintendo catch up to the power level of Xbox One and PS4, that they're straight away left in the dust again with these new upgraded systems?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this before, but ultimately, I don't care about power. I just care about the games. And if the power differential means that third-party developers are turned off by NX, then absolutely, it worries me. But if power is not necessarily the issue, and in fact, there's a framework within the NX that is as easy to develop for as the other consoles, and it does get some third-party support, then that's great too. So I think it's about the games, not the power. And I sound like Reggie now, don't I? Like,
yeah.
On my podium, like, ready to say, it's about the games, we got the games, here are the games.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, since the start of this podcast, and I say this all the time, but like I'm just playing an absolute wealth of Nintendo games, and combine that with indie games and all the AAA titles that are coming out, I always have something to play between 3DS and Wii U, and yes, I could potentially pick up an Xbox or a PlayStation, but ultimately I already have far too much to play, and I'm kind of looking forward to a bit of time off in terms of like there's not a whole lot of Nintendo games coming out between now and the NX, and that's a nice time for me at least to clear that backlog and play all the stuff that's already come out.
Yeah, John, you were saying that you're, you know, catching up on a lot of old Nintendo franchise. I think having the virtual console on Wii U has probably been a great thing for you to go back and like play Paper Mario, play all these old Zelda games.
And we
like
love
that.
We love the VC.
Yeah.
Please have backwards compatibility. That's all I need, because I really love all my Wii games system. And to get the new system, I'm going to have to sell the old system, right? I really don't want to lose out. I want to keep Xenoblade. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I love Splatoon. Like, I love to pick it up and just play.
I think our prediction, MBZ, was that we actually don't think they'll go backwards compatible.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a lot of baggage to bring with you, really. And I think it may be bad for the Nintendo fan, but I think Nintendo do need a clean break. They need a fresh start. But I think it's pretty much a lot that we've covered from E3 here. We talked about other things, non-Nintendo, and a little bit of NX. I think that's probably going to close out the show. So it is. It is indeed. While we do that, let's plug ourselves, tell people where you can find us on the internet and all that good stuff. And John, we'll start with you. Where can people find you on Twitter, on YouTube, on all those kind of places?
Just follow NBZ and you can see us bantering back and forth. Other than that, I might be joining another website to do some stuff. So I don't really have any websites to plug right now, but I'm sure.
Very good. Well, just follow him on Twitter, and I'm sure you'll be updated on the future things. Very good. Bally, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at Ballyman91. That is also my name on the Miiverse. That's BallyMan91. And I post a lot of rubbish on both of those, so do check me out on those. Always up for a political debate.
yes, hot topic as the last few days have proved, Bally will talk to you back and forth.
If you have any opinions, do let me know. I enjoy that thing.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at LordNBZ. The podcast also has a Twitter of its own, and that is at TNL Podcast. Follow us and find out all the latest. That includes videos that we do on the YouTube channel and other things related to both of us. You can email us, of course, at our email address. Bally, people need to send in more emails because it's post-E3 and it's a new future. Where can they send those to?
Please send all your emails to thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That's thisnintendolife@gmail.com. It's a big summer ahead in many ways.
Yes. Well, we're just going to be waiting for Nintendo to be like, in September, oh, by the way, next week we're going to do this event, and then we're all going to lose our mind. So I look forward to that.
And we'll be covering it eagerly.
Yes, we absolutely will be covering it on the show. You can find the show in many places. We are on iTunes, we're on Stitcher. We will eventually be on Google Play when they come to our goddamn country. We are on YouTube most Wednesdays and the iTunes show on Mondays. Aside from that, Bally, I think we're looking to do another Backlog Club pretty soon.
We are.
So keep an eye on our Twitters and things. We will probably announce it in the coming weeks, probably. Because, you know, it's a lazy summer. There's not too much to play. So maybe we'll get a longer game in there. So if you want to play along with one of our, you know, virtual console picks, then be sure to, you know, keep your eyes peeled. That will be happening eventually. So, and with that, I think that's pretty much going to close things out. Anything else, Bally, that we need to mention before we leave?
I don't think so. Just thanks very much for joining us, John.
Thank you for having me. I've had a great time. You guys are awesome. And I just love talking about... I don't have a lot of Nintendo friends, so, you know, any chance I get is awesome. So, yeah, no, guys, I'm very honored to be here, and I appreciate it, and please have me back anytime.
We will, absolutely. Hopefully have you back for a full show in the future. So, yeah, that is going to be us. We'll be back at you in a couple of weeks' time with a brand new podcast, a brand new show all about the world of Nintendo. So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time. Goodbye, everyone.